enjoy a good squeeze.
Hi, I'm Margot.
And I'm August.
And this is Good Squeeze.
A podcast about the world of James Bond.
And where we can squeeze it into our lives.
That's right. Ooh, yeah, that was
smooth. That was good. We just gave each other a thumbs up.
Three episodes in, we're getting the hang of it. Yes, indeed. We are going on this journey of James Bond, and our journey's taking us to Japan with You Only Live Twice.
That's right.
Or so it seems. Now, why this one? Like, last week, we were talking GoldenEye.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking GoldenEye because it made us all comfy and cozy. That was my favorite Bond movie, and we wanted to get in the mood, set things off right.
Mm-hmm. It was the first one I liked. You Only Live Twice. You're the one who made the selection this time.
I did, and the main reason why is because, one, you had not seen this one.
Mm-hmm.
This is one I had not gotten a chance to introduce you to yet, and it's a little spicy.
Oh, it's spicy.
It's a little spicy.
It's spicy, all right. Well, first there's Shawnee Boy, who's playing Bond this time, and we know he's real spicy.
Yeah.
He likes it hot.
And I knew my opinion of this movie that I haven't really shared with you too much. Like, this isn't one I talk about too mm-hmm. often with you. Like, either sharing a moment or a memory.
A quote, rarely.
Even. I really don't do that around you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this conversation could be interesting because this is now the time I get to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, because this is your first viewing, and that's going to, you know, allow an interesting conversation also
on
from your end.
Right.
Your thoughts and opinions, because I am the nostalgic expert.
Expert.
Yeah, expert.
And I'm the novice viewer. I'm the little guy.
Yeah, just doing your best.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, with this movie, I knew it was going to be a little spicy. And I wanted to set the mood, you know, and that's part of this, I don't want to say part of the show, it's just part of us, part of our viewing of it. I want to set the mood.
In general, as cinephiles, I feel like we've always been like this, where you know, you go to the movie theater, you get your popcorn, you get your drink, you get your candy, you get settled, you get nice and snug in the hopefully comfortable movie seats, and if they're not comfy, you find a way. And you immerse yourself in the movie. And when you're in a movie theater, it just happens because there's this massive screen in front of you and it's like dark. So you're in it, but hopefully. But when you're at home, specifically, you know, it's a home. Like, we're not, you know, it's a living space. We're not, you
sure.
know, totally immersed in darkness and all that. So the way that you have curated this environment, just every time we watch any movie, but in particular Bond movies, is really completely immerses you in the experience. So if you want to set the scene for us.
You know, like, I tend to do that in life. If we're watching a particular movie, I will make, hey, they ate this meal in this film, I'm going to make that meal.
Mm-hmm.
Or they drink this, we're going to drink that. Just like the little details to kind of set the vibe before the movie starts.
You do dial it up too, which I like, because you say, like, oh, just a little something, but down the line, you know, as we watch these Bond films, you know, if they're eating, like, toenails, you'll be like, ooh, let's cook up some toenails.
Wait till Die Another Day.
Oh,
no, I'm kidding.
God, okay.
When he eats Halle Berry's toenails. Now, so this one, of course, You Only Live Twice, Bond travels to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So I made some Japanese cuisine, made some ramen. We ordered some sushi.
Made some ramen. Ordered some sushi.
I'm not making the sushi, but I'll set the vibe.
Not yet.
We'll order it. And this was a special treat. Was it last year? You got me this cocktail book. It's called Shaken. And it is cocktails inspired by James Bond. Yes, some cocktails featured are from the novels, from the films, but some are specifically curated for this book, made up, if you will. And tonight was one of those. In this book, there are several that are associated with You Only Live Twice, but one cocktail in particular was called the Tiger Tanaka.
Mm.
And Tiger Tanaka is a is a real cool Bond ally. At least I think he is. We'll find out if you do as we go along. But the Tiger Tanaka is Suntory whiskey, or any Japanese whiskey, or any whiskey. But in this case, it was Suntory. Sake. I don't remember what kind of sake, but the alcoholic kind, and the kind that's good to warm up, because you also put in some jasmine tea and some boiling water. And you let that all brew, and you drink it warm. And I put in a little mint leaf, a little garnish of mint.
Oh, yeah. It's just floating in the little sake cup. It looks so aesthetically beautiful and so fragrant and so just lovely. I mean, you know, if you're over 21. So you did that. The ramen, you want to walk us through that a little bit? Or was it
I dolled up some cheap ramen. You
did a great job, though. It was amazing. It was some of the best noodles I've ever had. It was real good.
Take any, like, dollar packaged ramen. In this case, we upgraded. We got Shin ramen. That's $2. So you take the little flavor packet. You pour that in a bowl. Get an egg. Crack that in there. A little mayo. A little garlic. And you just stir that shit up and poured it in with the noodles once those were done boiling.
I missed the first, like, 60 seconds of the movie because I was just staring into my bowl.
I'm like, wait, quick, look.
Yeah, I was like, what are we watching?
Yeah, I remember being like, isn't this music great? And you finally, like, looked up for the first time.
Just noodles hanging out my nose. Like,
yeah. Little ramen, little sush. Little Tiger Tanaka cocktail from this Shaken cocktail book that you gave me as a gift. And I feel like this will be featured throughout our show. Mm-hmm. You know, the next movie we watch, I'm certainly going to look into if there is a featured cocktail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking it with you listeners out there and you across the way from me.
You've already dabbled with it too. It's called Shaken. For those of you who missed, you can. Yeah,
is it called Shaken?
It's called Shaken. It's called Shaken.
Not stirred. No.
Yikes. You've experimented with a few other drinks and they've all been delicious. One of them we were a little bit wary of because it looked like bathtub water. But as opposed to bath water,
I'm sure we'll revisit that one when we get around to that movie. Yeah. But the Tiger Tanaka, you took a sip. What did you think?
It was fragrant. It was beautiful. It was warm. It got all over you. You know, I spilled it everywhere. No,
it was right up my alley.
It was delicious.
We like hot sake.
Oh yeah.
Especially when it's served at the correct temperature, like this is 98.4 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, definitely not Celsius. It'd be insane to be on fire.
We enjoy that. So throwing whiskey and jasmine tea in there, it was nice.
And I don't typically gravitate towards whiskey, but it was just a beautiful accompaniment. Yeah, no, it was absolutely lovely. So you could kind of picture what's going on here. We got some sushi, we got some ramen, we got variety. We've got enough that we can look up when we want to, we can eat when we need to, and a little something to sip on. We want to be able to a little sippy here
and vibe and enjoy the film potentially. So so regardless of if you like this movie or not, at least, you know, we had this cozy environment. And for me, You Only Live Twice has always been a super super cozy one for me personally. You were looking, I kind of like jumped over what you were going to say. You look like you were going to say something.
I was going to say something, but now I'm curious as to if you want to give us some context on the coziness or if that's going to be kind of peppered in throughout the conversation.
You're going to hear me say cozy at least 1,000 times over the next conversation.
I wanted to bring it back to right when I was like eating the noodles, hanging out my nose. And you said, isn't this music beautiful? And that's honestly that's kind of how I want to just transition towards, you know, the movie talk, because that was the first thing that I noticed about that movie. The music really just you're scratching your eye. You okay? I'm just pointing it out. I can't see you. Well, I can see you. It's just what was I gonna say? The music, that's for sure the first thing that stood out. And just even the opening credits, everything about it. I don't know if you want to lead the conversation on that one.
I mean, I know you personally have said over our relationship that you've never really paid attention too much to scores until I was kind of like making you at least more aware, like, hey, there's music here. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
You put on the GoldenEye soundtrack just like, and it literally sounds like, you know, just the whole time.
How dare you? How dare you? But I certainly pointed out this piece of music is, John Barry, who did, so far all these, scores of these Bond films. This is Bond film number 5 is what I mean. He opens up with a banger with, that ship, you know, the spaceship eating spaceship.
Yeah, it was like watching the Muppets horror film or something. That was something else. Well, that whole opening sequence. What did you think of that?
Da 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 da. You know, as a kid, I was humored by it, and the reason I was humored by it particularly was because of Austin Powers. See, I had seen Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, before I ever saw You Only Live Twice. And You Only Live Twice might be the greatest inspiration for some of these Austin Power films. If you think about it, Dr. Evil, the Nehru jacket, the scar over his eye, being bald. That's Blofeld in this film.
Yeah.
You finally see the villainous Blofeld in this film, and that's the look they went with. Back then, it was, you know, very shocking. Now, it's almost laughable because...
Because, I mean,
most people think Dr. Evil.
For me, I mean, that's the thing. I'd only ever seen Dr. Evil as Dr. Evil. Mm-hmm. And so anyone who looked like him, I was like, oh, look, that's Dr. Evil.
Sure.
It to me, it wasn't like, oh, look, it's Dr. Evil, who also looks like Blofeld. So when they revealed him, I turned to you and I was like, oh, what else? I was like, is that the first revelation of his appearance? And you were like, yeah. And I was like, well, okay. Like, to me, it's a little comical. You had the cat, you had my poor cat. I'm freaking out when there's those explosions. We are jumping ahead here.
Reason why it was so humorous to me also is because Dr. Evil escapes in a ship. Earlier in the movie, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but they make the joke. They're like, "What's Daddy? What's that? It looks like a big Johnson. Pay attention."
Oh.
Because it looked like a penis.
That's good.
And that's what, you know, this spaceship eating spaceship looked like. It looked like a penis with a mouth.
I will say, though, there's something so unsettling about it because it wasn't just like, look, a penis with a mouth. I kind of just walked past that comment, didn't even look at it, and now it's like smacking me in the face. While it was happening, it was goofy, it was gimmicky, it was very like, I don't know, like it's a spaceship eating a spaceship, so you know, you're just kind of going along with it. But what was also kind of terrifying about it is because it was so gimmicky and weird, but how slowly it was happening. And it's the speed of it. Because if it was just like chomp, I would have been like, that's goofy and silly. And what would have happened? But the fact that they're like building up to it and it like cuts the hose and this astronaut's just like, in space, like gone forever. Like we never find him again. Like that also kind of freaks me out. And, oh, God. First off, I'm terrified of outer space, just like I'm terrified of the ocean.
I'm terrified of whatever your computer's doing. Is it taking off? What? Sounds like a rocket ship.
What do you mean?
I don't know.
It's heating. It's overheating. Okay. We'll have this, like, hum in the background to really set the mood, as we like to do.
Should be okay. I'm not too concerned about
it. Yeah, me neither. Anyways.
Yeah.
So, with the spaceship, just it happening so slowly, there's nothing they can do to stop it. Because if it was fast, at least you'd be like, ah, damn, they really didn't stand a chance. And then you could cope with that, cope with it in the future. But the fact that it was just like, they're like, what do we do? What do we do? And I'm like, you can't do anything. You're in outer space.
What is that thing?
Yeah. They're like, what is it? It's not, because the thing is, if you see another spaceship coming towards you, you're probably thinking, oh, it's going to blow me up. Not, oh, it's going to eat us. Like, what's thinking that in outer space, unless you see an alien? Even then, that's kind of, no one's just jumping to that conclusion. So It's, that's the thing. It's goofy. It's like, it's eating it, but it's effective.
Oh yeah. I never felt that it was goofy personally. I found it humorous because I made the connection to Austin Powers, but you know, I was very little when I probably shouldn't have been allowed to watch Austin Powers, but I certainly was.
Your parents were like, PG, great.
Oh, it's PG-13.
Whoa.
Yeah. I watched it at my aunt's house. but, so yeah, I was probably 9 years old, and I was 9 years old when I saw this movie. And, yeah, I never found it to be goofy. You know, being 9, 10, you know, I started watching these Bond movies when I was 7.
Mm-hmm.
I never found them to be silly. Now, retrospectively, as a 30-something now, I guess I see it like that. Like, not goofy, but some of the things that happen are like, that's a little cheesy here and there. But I don't care. You know what I mean? Like,
It doesn't add to negative reviews,
not
I guess.
Not for me, yeah. No. Like, I hold these movies in such high, like, reverence. It's just, like, do no wrong to a degree.
For me, it does so much wrong. That's the problem. But that's the thing. There's appreciation in that. So, I guess, for, like, speaking of wrongs and all that, You Only Live Twice is a little spicy, and as we mentioned earlier. And, oh, what was I going to say? Just the amount of just stereotypical, like, Asian, you know, kind of quips and, you know, like, oh, Chinese women or something. I don't know. I don't even remember what his exact quote was, but he says a lot about Chinese women. He's like, why do you guys all taste the same or something? No, you taste different.
Yeah.
You taste different. And then she's like, better? And he's like, nah, not better. And you're like, oh, fuck
not
off.
Better, just different.
God, if somebody said, you taste different, be like, better? And it's like, no, just different. Be like, what, like cheese? Like, what, you fucking... Fuck off. So rude,
I guess.
But then she does, like, set him up to get killed, so, you know, fair guess, justification or whatever.
Fun factoid about that actress, I don't remember the character's name, but that actress, she returns to the James Bond series in 2006 in Casino Royale. She's one of the card players at the poker table, much older, of course. But yeah, it was kind of interesting.
She, like, stared dead into the camera, like, notice me. Do you remember?
She
I've done this before.
She plays her hand, is like, oh, it's a good hand. Oh, you think it's better? Like, no, yeah. Just different.
She just yells and they're like, we'll cut that.
Yeah. But yeah, oh, that I remember the first time I watched this movie, and I'm not even kidding. Like, it starts, and, you know, you have the ship eating the other ship, and it goes down to Bond, and he gets, to my knowledge, a trap sprung on him, and he gets blown away, blasted to smithereens, and the police come in and check on him. It's like, at least he died on the job. And then it goes in the opening song. I thought, as a 9-year-old, I was actually watching the end of the movie by accident. Cause, you know, popping in a VHS cassette tape. I thought maybe it was the end of the movie and Bond died.
God. Did you just rewind it and you were like, no, this can't be it. This can't be the end.
I did, actually. You started crying. I did. I did rewind, if I recall. Wow. And yeah, and it turns out you only live twice.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I had to figure that out the hard way as a 9-year-old.
Okay. Here's something that I found interesting about that opening scene. So, okay, then we'll talk about the opening credits. But, the opening scene, you know, he gets shot and then he gets thrown in the water immediately after, and they're like, burial at sea, which is so cool. I mean, not from because I'm scared of the ocean, as I just mentioned, but super cool. Like, naval officers get that. Like, that's, I just think that's super neat.
As Bond is.
Exactly, yeah. You knew this. Like, it's also plastered on every newspaper in this movie. It's like, naval officer, Sean Connery, naval, and not fucking Sean Connery, James Bond, naval officer, or whatever. Anyways, that happens, and then, you know, they fish him out with their little scuba gear, and then they open this up, and he's just like, I'm okay, or I don't know what the line was, obviously, he didn't say that.
Permission to come aboard.
Yeah, they didn't super duper say anything about, like, good thing you were wearing that bulletproof jacket, or, like, good thing your skin is biogenetically engineered one.
Something new from QLab.
What do you call it?
Bioengineered.
Bioengineered. Jesus Christ. Ah, oh, God.
Good thing you are a bionicle.
Yeah, we're not like two very intelligent people talking. We're just normal people talking. So, you know, you can expect this to happen enough. They didn't address it, which at first bothered me because I was like, but how? And then I was like, the spaceship ate the spaceship. I think we can move past this logic.
Yeah, you know.
He's a spy.
They really don't point that out, but it was all a ruse. It was all to, you know, you're dead, 007, mm-hmm. so now, maybe now your enemies will leave you alone. It wasn't like he was actually gunned down. It was all, like, planned. Even Moneypenny mentions, like, how was that? How was the girl we set you up with? Which girl? It was all a part of the plan.
Oh, thank you for explaining that to me, because actually I didn't get that. So you should have gotten your laser pointer and been like, okay, wait.
Pause the movie. I'd be doing that every 5 minutes.
Speaking of ruses and sneaking and spying, this movie did not... I mean, okay, I could just dissect this in every single scene. First off, Sean Connery fights like he's in a bar fight. Like, there's just no grace or elegance. There's that one fight where he was fighting the guy in the office. He's like the big dude who drove him there.
Yeah.
That was really cool, but it was 99% the other guy that was doing all the cool stuff. Like, he was getting flipped and thrown and this and that, and he was grabbing the couch, and Sean Connery was like, I'll grab the couch too, and you're like, oh, put it down, dude, you're gonna get hurt. So yeah, he's fighting this guy, and even before that, when the guy in the mask came up to try mm-hmm. to who did he kill?
He stabbed Henderson, the contact.
Okay, there we go. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Just up against the wall, just like I'm sorry.
And what is it?
What if he never moved him? What if he just waited patiently, like, oh, I'm going to let him think for a bit.
We're in Japan. I have to wait out of respect.
Yeah. Right? Like, what if he was just a really polite spy? Yeah. Anyway, but he's not, thank God. So he chases after this guy and, like, fucking beats the crap out of him like a good Scotsman. He's Scottish? Scotsman that he is. And then he, like, you know, disguises himself. But the way that he, like, chases after him and they're both running kind of just looks like when you see 2 5-year-olds like running after each other because one of them took the ball and the other one was using the ball, and they're just like flailing their arms and like yelling almost, but they're not yelling in the movie. So it looked very clumsy. And then bar fights him, and then he like sneaks behind a tree, like, you know, he's a spy.
He is a spy,
and he like does like the tiptoe walk. He's like, whoop whoop, and he like goes behind a tree to look at this guy in a car who the guy could clearly see him, and we're expected to believe, okay, wait, the spaceship ate the spaceship. I just have to keep reminding myself of that, like, but that tiny thing, I was like, he can be a little bit more spy-y than that, like beating the crap out of some guy and then just, like, tiptoeing behind a tree.
Not only did he beat the crap out of him, he stabbed him pretty
good. Yeah, he did. He really did. He killed that guy.
Fun fact.
And then he put on his mask, which I think is a little twisted, but, like,
he died of disease later.
Yeah.
Fun fact, the big henchman that Bond fights in this office, the one we're talking about, who's doing all the action, he was a pro wrestler at the time. I can't remember his first name. I certainly remember his last name. It was Maivia. And he is the grandfather of The Rock.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. Dwayne Johnson's grandfather played that wrestling henchman.
That's crazy.
Isn't that kind of crazy?
That is awesome. It always comes back to wrestling. I'm just saying. Like,
yeah.
Everything's connected. At the center of the web, WWE. Well, F, because...
Then, now, forever.
Yeah.
I've always liked that part where he's fighting. There's a lot of jump cuts back and forth. It makes the action seem a little more fast-paced. And they probably were maybe compensating for Sean Connery. I don't know if you knew this or not, and we'll point it out as we discuss different things we felt or liked about the movie or disliked.
Mm-hmm.
It's well documented that Sean Connery did not show up for this movie, if you know what I mean. He was very burnout.
Yeah.
By the time You Only Live Twice was coming out, it was his fifth outing as James Bond, and he was over it.
Yeah.
Big time.
But, like, in every single one of his movies, the fighting choreography is, like, there. But, like, he, like I said, he fights like he's in a bar fight. It's just, like, haymakers. And, like dude, didn't you get special? Yeah, and then he's like, don't you know I took special training? But he's like Steven Seagal. He's just, like, blocking in and kick like that. Like, you know, he doesn't actually... I'm sure he knows the theory, but the practice needs practice, essentially.
He's a blunt instrument, you know?
Tuna fish? Like, poof, like, I don't know, just like, I don't know, finesse. Finesse is what I wish we got more from him in this movie, and his previous performances, too. But as we know, he's not a brute. That's the thing, too. I don't know what word to use to describe it, but anyway, so that bothered me. A lot of the times, like, he'd be running, and, you know, I'm like, hey, lighter on your feet, man. Like, you know, they can hear you. And that's the thing, too. After the guy got stabbed, he just, like, jumped through that paper wall thing. Like, he didn't even use the door. I'm like, dude.
You laughed your ass off when he did that.
I thought it was just so, like, wait a minute. I'm like, you don't know. Yeah, there's paper, but that could have been metal rods, you know? Like, they obviously weren't. But what if they were? Mm-hmm. You know, or maybe what if they pulled, like, a Wile E. Coyote and they put a brick wall there? Just except for that little window where he stabbed the guy. And then they threw
poof. Now, like, Marga, you're dealing in what ifs.
Yeah.
This isn't science fiction. This is science fact. That is a real quote about Moonraker. But anyway, I'm like, good job, August.
I'm like, yeah. Novice. I'm thinking too much. It's my problem.
So we're touching on Sean Connery, James Bond, action scenes. Are there any action scenes that came to mind throughout this film that you did enjoy? Because I know this one we're talking about in particular, you didn't really care for. Mm-hmm. We are going to touch on the grand finale, which you and mic about how you felt. But we'll talk about that in a moment. But is there any that come to mind that you did enjoy?
Here's the thing. I did enjoy all of them. I enjoyed all of them. I thought they were great. They were super entertaining. I was very entertained. Was I like, oh my God, like, is he like secretly an MMA fighter? Like, at no point did he fool me. But I want to be fooled, you know? That's the thing. That's what was missing for me. Action scenes that, I was in awe about, I can't really think off the top of my head. Can you help refresh my memory, though? Because I can't really think of any others.
A few that I enjoyed. Well, the big one from this movie is the Little Nelly helicopter fight, where, you know, they assemble Little Nelly. He takes off in this, like, gyrocopter and geared to the nines with rockets and all kinds of Q gadgets, and these other helicopters come in, and it, you know, that Bond theme plays for like 6 minutes, and he's flying around blasting them all to smithereens.
Real quick, Q was a stud in this movie. Second, we're just gonna move right past that one. That whole scene, as soon as they were like, look, it comes together, like, it looked like a 90s, like, infomercial where they're like, so easy to build, you know, and it all just kind of comes together.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was like, this is so goofy, but I loved it. I loved it. And then he gets in his tiny little, he's like six times the size of it. It looked like Wacky Races. Like, he was just, like, ready to go. And,
in that thing, and you looked at me, and you're like, for real?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
Because I was kind of expecting a toy, you know, sometimes, like, when they just kind of hold it on a string and you're like, oh, for sure. Yeah, that's Sean Connery, quote unquote. Because then they do use toys later, and we'll get to that in a minute. But everything that was planes, ocean, like, even at the end when him and, is it Kissy Suzuki? Whose name we never hear. They're on the life raft, and then the submarine picks them up. Obviously, that was played in reverse, but, like, still super cool. They got, like, an actual submarine on there. Mm-hmm. They got a bunch of different aircrafts. Like, I love that kind of stuff. When you actually have, because we're so used to CGI these days, and we're so used to seeing all this, like, computer animated, that when you see an actual aircraft that is so intricate and military, and, or not even military specific, but, like, what is it, Little Nelly or whatever? Mm-hmm. When you see it, it could be as goofy as that, but it could also be as impressive as, like, a huge aircraft or a submarine. When you see that and you know it's real, it's so cool. It's so cool. It makes such a difference. And I was really impressed by that. And that actually leads me to my next point, which is the set design and the practical effects and everything. They do a wonderful job with that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. So Ken Adams was the production designer on this mm-hmm. film. And, man, there's a couple other things that are coming to mind now. But I was going to say this is his masterpiece, this movie. But there's a couple others that I'm like, oh, that's good, that's good. But that volcano lair mm-hmm. at the end, that was a real, like, that was huge. A huge set that they made that could be seen from miles away. It cost more than the budget of Dr. No did, that one set piece. But it was beautiful.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was beautiful. Like a I guess
wait,
the word.
How much did they spend on Dr. No?
Like $1 million.
That's it?
Yeah, I think
we
so.
We could do that. Well, okay, we couldn't. We couldn't even scratch that surface.
We could think about doing that if we won the lottery.
and even then we'd be like, nah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's huge. And it was like, is the word tangible? Like it was like,
yeah.
Like you could use
it. Was
it
was an
like,
item.
There
you
were
could
people,
go knock, knock, knock.
There were people using elevators in there. There were people like moving through the hallways in the back. There's a monorail that went through it.
It's functional. That's crazy.
Functional, there not tangible. Functional.
That's tangible and functional.
Yeah. And it's just so impressive. But not only that, things like we can't remember what it's called. The Osada Corporation, office.
I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
The office that he fights that wrestler in.
Okay, yeah.
It's, if you look at it, it's beautifully designed. Just the architecture of it all.
Interior design.
Yeah, the interior design is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Even like in the beginning, like all the military men like watching the rockets go off and stuff. it's beautiful to look at. This movie is very, very aesthetically pleasing. Mm-hmm. And I think a big key to that being aesthetically pleasing is the fact that they did travel to Japan. This movie is an incredible travelogue. And I believe maybe to some things could be seen as boring.
Mm-hmm.
They do spend a lot of time lingering on different things. Like even Little Nelly. When Little Nelly takes off and is flying, you're watching that thing fly for a while because it's flying over the mountains of Japan. It's like different shots. So you're getting a view of the area.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they first get to Tokyo, there's a lot of different establishing shots. Because, yes, as viewers in 1967, this was like escapism.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to Japan.
And that's the value of shooting on location is you're actually getting it. You're getting the action, the scene, and it just sells the movie so much more. Once again, immersion. It brings you into everything. And then when you're looking at the sets and you're looking at how they correlate with, and that's the thing. When you're looking at someone's home, the inside of it, or an office, or some kind of man-made environment, and you look at the outside, there's always going to be some correlation, unless you have no taste. There's going to be some correlation with your natural environment. So when you shoot on location and you actually get to see all of Japan, and then you look at those sets, you believe they're there.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, like you see that versus if like,
absolutely.
Yeah. Like if they like did do some, like they got some shots of Japan, but then they filmed in America. Yeah. Maybe the sets would have looked a little different because they weren't in it. They weren't around mm-hmm. that whole environment, and it just makes a world of a difference.
Yeah. They definitely shot on location here. And like even different things early in the movie, they watch a sumo wrestling match.
That was cool.
And it's a whole thing. They do the, like, not the introductions, but the like the ceremonial part of it. And it goes on for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You watch the whole thing, but that is the form of escapism. Like, you get to watch a sumo wrestling match in this film. Same with later near the end of the film, there is a traditional Japanese wedding. And it goes on for a long time, and they do every little bit of it. But you are experiencing a Japanese wedding, which at that time you might not have really gotten to see before.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate this movie for those reasons. And also, I was kind of touching on it earlier, and I said I'll mention Cozy a million times because this one is super, super cozy to me for those reasons, because mm-hmm. it lingers here and there on the establishing shots, the countryside of Japan, the cities of Tokyo, the cities mm-hmm. of Tokyo, the streets of Tokyo, the sumo match, this elongated mm-hmm. wedding, even just like being in the ocean, like, because Bond's a Japanese fisherman in this movie. Really?
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge in a minute.
Real cozy to me. And here's, like, one of the little factoids that you might not have known. I've mentioned in past episodes, I fall asleep to a Bond movie every night. Do I finish it that night? No. It usually takes me, like, 2 weeks to finish one movie. But You Only Live Twice is one of the ones I watch the most. It's one of the more frequented visits to Bond Slumberland.
I got a question for you. So we both like anime, that's not a secret, and we do have a deep appreciation for Japanese culture. Mm-hmm. Was this the first introduction, your first introduction to anything like to the Japanese environment? Not anime, not like Pokemon, not I'm not talking animation. I'm talking about the environment of Japan, like what it looks like, the architecture, the landscape. Was this the first time you ever like saw it?
Possibly. As I mentioned, I was probably 9 years old when I saw this. I might have seen martial arts films at the time.
Okay.
Some Bruce Lee films we had growing up, like Way of the Dragon. I remember watching at a very young age.
Is it?
You're right, it's set in Rome. Way of the Dragon is set in Rome.
Yeah, and a lot of these martial arts movies are set in China too.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah,
Bruce Lee's Chinese. Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah.
Or from I don't know where he's from, but
he's Chinese. Yeah. That is a great question. That I will settle on the answer of yes, yes.
Cool. Awesome.
You only live twice.
Just for the sake of a good squeeze, in the name of a good squeeze.
You squeezed it out of me. You got it. I always did enjoy a good squeeze.
That was good. That's a good one.
So, okay. I believe so. This is probably my first exposure. So that's mm-hmm. a special thing, too. Now, holding that, this movie's just climbing up my ranks.
You just want to believe it now. Like, that's it. We believe it. That's interesting, though, because I feel like that was also, for the time, that was probably a lot of people, especially English people. Because if you're, like, living in, like, America, West Coast, you do have access to that. I mean, we all know that, like, on the West Coast, in terms of immigration in like the 1800s and stuff, the East Coast, you got a lot of Europeans. And the West Coast, you got a lot of Asians, different, you know, countries, you know, a lot of people immigrating here. And so you're more, you know, you were around that kind of stuff. I mean, there are so many cities that had, you know, that and still do have Chinatown, Japantown, things like that, that represent the cultures that immigrated here.
Yeah.
But in England, at the time, probably wasn't incredibly popular. That probably wasn't something they were being super duper exposed to. I'm also ignorant, and I probably don't know a lot about this.
Well, I want to talk about this too much, but like, mm-hmm. Just the thought of World War II was 20 years before this film came out, and you know, who knows?
I'm sure they I was about to say, like, I'm sure they got over it. I'm not saying that, but I mean, you know, there are a couple of things that happened 20 years ago that were, you know, are now being featured in movies and funny jokes on TikTok and stuff.
Sure, right? Sure. And you know, they had TikTok in 1967,
of course,
it was called You Only Live Twice.
Yeah.
You Only Live TikTok.
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not laughing at that one.
That was bad.
That was bad.
As you laugh. But yeah, it's good escapism is what we're getting at.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
You're able to be transported to a place you wouldn't commonly be able to access, which mm-hmm. I appreciate. And
all the Bond films do that.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the... Yeah, exactly. That is... One of the key features of a Bond film is this catalog of locations.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, as I get older and like the new Bond films come out, like when Skyfall was coming out particularly, then Spectre and then No Time to Die, some of the things I looked forward to the most was, where are we going to go?
That's awesome.
You know, where are we going to go and how are we going to see it, kind of thing.
I'll be honest, as the novice viewer, the movies that we've seen so far, whenever there is an American, and spoiler alert, we live in America, me and August, Pennsylvania to be specific, whenever I hear an American accent that is not a Southern accent in a Bond film, I get kind of like, boring. Like, I'm like, I don't want that guy. I see that guy every day. You know, I want something exciting, something different.
You want a Sheriff J.W.
Yeah,
Pepper.
I think I do want a Sheriff J.W. Pepper. But What was I gonna say? Like, you know, that's the thing. It's like if I just hear some dude who's like, "Hello," I'm like, "Get him out of here." No, we don't. Like, no lines for that guy for sure.
Are there any in this film? Well, there is. There's one.
There's one American guy, right?
Yeah, he's like, "The ship blew up. The ship. It's attacking our boys.
Houston. Yeah. I have a comment." I'm like, no one cares about your fucking comment. Yeah, that's what bothered me. I was like, stop it. Send us to a cool space station.
I like that guy. I like his voice.
I don't hate him.
He actually appears later in another Bond film.
Oh my God, do they just like cryogenically freeze him and just like take him out whenever they need him? Like,
relax.
We need some guy.
Like, he came back like 10 years later.
Yeah, still.
In Spy Who Loved Me.
No, it's not even a matter of time. They're just like, all right, get back in there. And he's like, but I gotta, nope, get back in there. Yeah. And then they freeze him, and then the next day they just thaw him.
It is fun to like watch some of these older films back and notice like, oh, that person, they use that person again in a different Bond film, or this person is a totally different character in another Bond film. In this film, Henderson, who was the contact, who's like, oh, that martini is stirred. Yes. That is correct, right?
He's
like,
cool.
Absolutely. Whatever he says. He is, you'll see him later. He plays a villain later down the road. Different characters, same actor, Charles Gray. But yeah, it's interesting to me. Like, as we go along, I'm going to see if I can point these people out like I did earlier. The woman in the beginning is also in Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Charles Gray's in this and something else. That gentleman at Calling for Houston, he's in Spy Love Me. It's interesting.
Yeah, it really is. Because I was, okay, honestly, I don't know if you just saw me kind of stare in the distance for a second. I kind of stopped myself from saying something because it was going to be stupid, but I'm still going to say it. I was going to be like, it's kind of like in Judd Apatow films where all the different actors play different characters. Like, yeah, Margo, that's a fucking movie. Like, that's just what happens.
Yeah.
Every movie has a different character, but it's funny because these characters, so that was a stupid thing I was going to say, and it does not apply. But what's really cool about it is because each of these characters are so iconic, even the tiny little ones here and there, they stand out. They're curated, they're crafted. Like, sometimes they're a little silly, but like, there's something that marks you when you see them in their performance. So then when you see him a second time, you're like, wait a minute, I know you, you're not that guy. And then he is that guy, and you're like, oh, God damn it, I don't know how I feel about this. It's like multiple personality disorder, but like very cool multiple personality disorder.
You brought up characters. Let's talk about a few of them. We'll start with Bond. How did you feel of Sean Connery's portrayal as James Bond this go around?
I think I don't even want to play comparisons. I don't want to be like, oh, compared to blah blah blah, and coming off of GoldenEye and da da da. It's
just if you never saw anything else, how'd you feel about
his interpretation of Bond is. And you did say that this movie, he was kind of like, eh, fuck it, I don't care. But at the same time, like, you could tell, didn't you tell me that the director told him, wear a suit, like, sleep in a suit, do everything in a suit, like, live in the suit, because that's, like, what, you know, like, embody the suit, essentially. That's what he looked like. He looked like he slept in that suit. Sorry, I have to burp. There we go. He slept in the suit. He did everything in the suit. Like, he just, he felt like James Bond. He looks like a tired James Bond, but he was James Bond nonetheless. And I'm not coming from, and as I've said this in the first episode, I didn't know anything about James Bond. I knew Sean Connery was an actor. I'm not even joking. I was like, oh yeah, he's just a guy with a white beard and Archer really likes him, I think. What was I gonna say? So like, seeing him right now in this role, I wasn't even necessarily biased in terms of like, oh, but he's the original James Bond. I just was like, oh, it's cool seeing Sean Connery act. Like, it was just really cool to see him in that role, and he pulls it off. He really does. I mean, he feels he's the comfortable Bond, where it's like, I am James Bond. Fucking get over it. Here I am. Getting, you know, the guy brings him his martini, just stirred, right? And he's like, damn, fucking right. And then they high-fived, you know? Like, there's so much about it that's just so casual. But he gets it done. And that's what's so cool about his James Bond is, like, he's not, like, sweating over, like, freaking out. And he's not super tense. He's just kind of like, you know, hey, everybody. And doing, like, finger guns at people. You know, like, he's the chill. He's the cool James Bond.
Yeah, you're making him sound, like, real cool. Like, hey, buddy, like, finger guns. He was kind of like, are we done here? I want to go lay down.
But that's what I mean. Like, he'll be, like, dangling over, like, a shark with a heart on, and he's like, oh, quip. I don't know. I can't even think of what he'd say. But he'd be like, oh, fuck it. Like, you know, he wouldn't break a sweat, I feel like. He's a chill Bond who gets it done, and he takes the job seriously, but also he kind of wants to drink and have relations. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of, it feels like that's more his priority than his actual job, but it's a cool interpretation. I really do like it. I feel like it's very lived in. It's very, it fits, you know? He's so tall.
He is so fucking tall. And, you know, I think that is very noticeable. I believe I read that they specifically sought out Japanese actors who were at least 5'8" to be in this film, because Sean Connery is 6'2", and oh, wow, he was just a giant in comparison to a lot of these other fellow actors.
Oh my god!
On location,
6'2".
Yeah, he's a tall guy.
Like, let's go to Japan. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Now, yeah, he, as I mentioned, he was over it being Bond. He was very burnt out. Had a lot of disagreements with the producers, and he was, I don't want to say, maybe he was overwhelmed with how big the character was getting.
Yeah.
To the point when he traveled to Japan, they documented a lot of issues with the public and paparazzi, even interviewers, like, do not call yourself Sean Connery. You are James Bond. Like, okay. Like, I have to go to the bathroom. Like, people are following him into the bathroom and taking pictures of him in the stall and posting it on newspapers. Like, he's very frustrated the time. Had no privacy. Couldn't eat lunch alone. You know, he had to have extra security. It was very overwhelming, taxing, frustrating. God. And already before that, he was over it. Yeah. And, you know, it was announced, I think, during... Well, I don't know if it was announced during production that he was not going to return as Bond. And, you know, the producers offered him a lot of money to come back because he was under contract for one more. But because of how everything played out, they relieved him of that. And, you know, they went a different direction after this film.
Which we'll discuss another time.
Yeah, history will continue. But it's kind of not obvious. To me, I don't really see it as he's, like, tired or doesn't care. It's more like he doesn't care. I don't really see that. Yes, there could be some scenes where maybe there could have been more energy in it as he did in previous films, but I don't know. It never really bothered me.
I didn't say tired. I said lived in.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I actually don't even agree with that. It's, like, lived in.
I agree with it, and that's all that matters. So. Yeah,
he seems...
I will say real quick... Go ahead. No, I just want to get this in. Because you were talking about, like, you know, how he wasn't getting any privacy right now. It's just, like, honestly, you saying that, like, following him into the stall and people posting pictures in newspapers, like, that's what it's like to be a celebrity now. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, they have... training for this. They get warned. They know what they're getting into. Now, it sucks that celebrities don't get any privacy, but at the time too, we got to remember, like, that was not a common thing at all. That was, like, one of the first accounts of that, you know, where, like, people were literally just going absolutely gaga over an actor, like, not a musician, like, an actor. Yeah, no, just wanted to to say that. So here we are.
And I totally lost my track.
You were talking about how you don't agree that he's lived in.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think he's settled into the role, certainly, by this point. I think he might have hit that point in, like, Goldfinger and certainly in Thunderball. I mean, this is not far removed from those films. But I don't see it as a place of, like, I am, like, one with this role. There are times where he's just kind of like, it's funny because that point, it's very well said that he was over it, right? And that's what we're saying here now. But there are certain scenes in this movie that he's really going for it, especially in those fight scenes, the finale particularly. There's some key acting moments that he's doing that I really enjoy and
like
that
what?
I don't think... what's that?
Like what?
The whole thing of him, like, going into the spaceship at the end and just, like, putting on the suit and just having, like, these looks of, like, I can't believe I'm doing, like, what am I doing? Like, I'm going to just keep going on. Like, I don't know. It's just kind of the energy he's bringing.
That's so funny because I did not interpret that way. Yeah. I was just like, oh, look, Sean Connery's on set in a spacesuit.
Yeah, it's just like, the energy. But it's the energy he's bringing, yeah. You know, which could be.
Which was, like, not a lie. I'm just yeah, like,
I don't know. I just enjoy it.
Okay, yeah. I'm not telling you not to enjoy it. I'm just, nostalgic and novice, you know.
Yeah. That very mm-hmm. well could be it. Like, I watch this movie with blinders. Like, I'm saying I don't see him being like, I don't care. Like, I do see him being like, I do care. There are certain parts where I'm like, I could tell, like, maybe a little direction here would have been better. Mm-hmm. Like, do it like this. Let's do another take kind of thing. But, I never really feel like that when I watch this movie. Funny enough, I feel like that more when I watch, like, Diamonds Are Forever, when he comes back, like, 4 years after this movie comes out. But we'll get to that another day.
We're like, sneak peek, sneak peek, sneak peek.
Do you notice Sean Connery, he, like, slouches a lot, so he's, like, walking around.
Well, also, the ceiling was, like, at his shoulders, so he kind of didn't have a choice on that one.
What about when he's outside?
The sky was at his shoulders, too. He was just like, God damn it, like, couldn't catch a break. He's a tall guy. Like, my dad's like that. My dad is, like, 6'2". Oh, hey, look at that. Same as Sean Connery. And it's not a slouch. It's like a tall guy lean that starts at the, like, middle of your back. Yeah. Like, I don't know how to describe it.
You're used to it at that point.
That's what it is. Like, there's so much that your body can do to keep you pinned straight. So you kind of just lean into a form. And then people are like, bad posture. And you're like, no, I'm just super tall. I am 5'4", so I wouldn't know. But, and August here is 6'5", so he would know. he doesn't. That's what I'm talking about, though. It's the way he holds himself, the way that he talks, the way that he looks at people, his facial expressions. It's very like, I'm here, like, I am here. No, like, I am that was a My Hero reference for context. I don't know how to describe it other than, like, lived in. Like, he just,
I see. Like, your observation. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then as he exhales, the suit just morphs around him. And then he's like, ah. And then there he is. He's James Bond. That's what it is. You know?
Let's jump to another hero character. Mm-hmm. How about Tiger Tanaka?
Very cool.
I mentioned the cocktail that was named mm-hmm. after him. But yeah, he's a Bond ally that never comes back. Yeah. And I think he could do for a reboot even in the future.
We know you love a Bond ally. Just rightfully so. Bond allies are super cool. My favorite scene with that guy was his introduction when Bond goes down the slide. I'm sorry. That cracked me up. You know, he's talking. Everything's really cool about that whole scene of the slide. And he lands in that Shea lounge just a lounge chair. But he lands, like, perfectly, just, like, ready for a martini, like, his hands out and everything. And then the guy's like, yo, what's good, you know, in his candor. And the desk is so beautiful and the setting is great. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. these big bulbous TVs turn and face him. And it kind of recaps, like, look, I've been watching you the whole time. But if you watch the little TVs, it replays him falling onto the chair from the slide. And I was like, did he just show him falling into the chair? Like, he just did it. He knows he's there. Like,
I wanted you to see how cool you looked.
Yeah. He just pauses and, like, looks at the TV. He's like, that was really cool, right? Like, that's it. It was so funny because the footage before that made sense, where he's like, look, I've been watching you. And he's, like, walking around. But when he lands in the chair, that's just so silly. I was like, you didn't need to show him that. He just did it. That cracked me up. Saying it out loud, it doesn't seem so silly. But next time you fellas or whatevers are watching this movie, just pay attention to that. Because it's silly when it happens. What was I going to say?
We're talking Tiger. Tiger. as a Bond ally, and you mentioned I like a good Bond ally, and I mm-hmm. certainly do. What are some things, like, what how do you make you feel?
How do you make you so excited? Why don't you tell us how it made you feel?
I asked you.
I'm like, I don't know. I can't, like, verbalize it off the top of my head because there's just that scene that just popped in that really is at the forefront of my mind. I don't know. He's dubbed the whole time. It's kind of hard to, because then when he speaks in Japanese, he has a completely different voice. So here's what it is. First time watching this movie, I'm paying attention to the characters, but all those things that you're so used to seeing, I'm noticing for the first time. So to me, it's not necessarily a character that's coming out. It's the fact that he has a different voice when he speaks two different languages. Now, that happens. I am myself bilingual. When I'm speaking French, my voice goes into a different register than when I'm speaking English. But if you heard me speaking French in a different room and you didn't know I was there, you'd be like, huh, that sounds like Margot, but like not really. Like you could tell. This guy had two completely different voices, and I didn't really like that. Here's the thing.
Maybe you didn't like that it was so obvious.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't like that. Like, he had two different voices. When you're gonna, I know everybody was dubbed back in the day. That was the norm. That was a production norm. Like, you just went back and redid the audio. But when it's that obvious, I'm like, at least redub the Japanese too. Like, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Like, keep it consistent. I like consistency. I'm a sucker for consistency. Movie mistakes stand out to us really, really easily at this point, you more so than me. But when there's inconsistencies like that, it's kind of hard to look past it. Does it affect the character? No. But it affected my relationship with the character, I guess.
I gotcha.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
He's kind of like the M of Japan. I can't remember what their group was called. Not ISS, was it? Whatever. He's kind of like the M, but he's also kind of the Q as well, because he introduces Bond to a couple of gadgets, the rocket cigarette.
The cigarette could save your life. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm going to start saying that, even though I don't smoke, but I might start for fun.
Like, only if there are rockets in them. That kind of stuff's great. So he's a very significant character to Bond lore, but also the scene with when they're in the bathhouse. I always enjoyed that for obvious reasons, but
I was like, what bathhouse? I'm like, oh, the spicy bathhouse.
Yeah, where they like
pick one.
Pick one. Good choice. She's quite sexiful. Yeah,
that is what he says, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought I misheard that, and I was like, oh, maybe he meant successful. Like, I don't know. And I was like, why would he tell him that she's successful? Like,
good choice.
She's very successful. Like, cool.
She has a great credit score.
Yeah, very empowered. Ooh, progressive.
Now instead,
he said sexiful. That's like the polar opposite of that. Hey, good for her.
But even the set, too. Ken Adam strikes again. Just like the little pools that Bond and Tanaka are chilling in. And you got the women in the background. Like, the cinematography. Mm-hmm. The cinematography in this film is wonderful.
Art direction, all that, absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. I think production-wise, I said this one's so pleasing to look at, but that has a lot to do with not just the interior design and things like that, but the music. We were talking about the music earlier. This music really does a great job at setting the vibe, setting the tone of like what you're about to experience. Because yes, there are the Bond beats, you know, previously in like Goldfinger and Thunderball. It's very
brassy.
Yeah, very bombastic and brassy. This one, definitely more. The Japanese strings are heavily incorporated. Mm-hmm. It's there's like this calming whimsy, almost like a mystery of sound. That sounds odd, but that's what kind of came out of my mouth.
Calming just now. Whimsy, a mystery of sound. That'd be in the back of the DVD. What did you just say? Calming whimsy, a mystery of sound, end quote, and then a good squeeze.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I enjoy that aspect of it. I was listening to the soundtrack just casually as I went about my day today.
Of course you were.
Yeah. But the theme song, that's something we forgot to do in previous episode was talk about the theme song.
Yeah.
We're going to forget stuff. We're going off the cuff. We have no notes. And we're just going off of memory. And so we'll forget things, of course. There's so much to say. This movie, the one we're talking about now, came out, you know, 50 years ago almost. Mm-hmm. So we're going to, you know, have things re-jog in our minds
later.
Things
are going to slip through the cracks, and we're going to say, get it. Ah, got away. So
I said 50. It's actually almost 60 years old.
Holy crap.
But, so
67 it came out?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Look at me.
Nancy Sinatra sang the theme song for this movie.
Hell yeah, she did.
It was originally offered to Frank Sinatra, who passed on it, But he's like, give it to my daughter.
Good for him. He was like, just sitting on his money throne with the mafia just hanging out behind him. Like,
8 cigarettes in his mouth.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm too busy to sing.
Bunch of rockets coming out of him.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Originally, I said Frank Sinatra, but John Barry, he had already recorded the opening with a performer named Julie Rogers. And you can hear this version of You Only Live Twice. And he felt that something was missing.
Mm.
So he reached out to find someone else to fill in. That's why I said mystery earlier, because I read this. I'm like, he felt it wasn't mysterious enough. Nice. That's where it came from. He felt the song that he recorded with Julie Rogers wasn't mysterious enough. So he rewrote it and wanted to go in a different direction. So instead of having the director or the producer say, like, this isn't working, let's go a different direction, he kind of did it on his own. And through Nancy Sinatra, we got the song we got. However, she was, like, super, super nervous. And it took, like, over 20-some takes to get this song together. And apparently it was a big old mess. So he took snippets from all these different takes and pieced together the song we got, so it sounds the way it does.
So she's not even good.
She is, you know.
No, she's not.
She is. She has a legendary career too, but you know,
I guess it's all cut and paste for her career. Like,
I guess the grandeur of this opportunity was intimidating.
I guess, yeah.
And who knows what the environment was like.
What if it's like the curse of the recording of the theme song? It just happens every single time. They're like, God damn it, why can't we get this right? And like all of them, Adele, Billie Eilish, others, like they've just been cut and paste together, you know?
I think Sam Smith recording Writings on the Wall for Spectre was done in one take. And that's what we get. And I think Billie Eilish recorded that with her brother on their phone.
What?
I think so.
Or maybe you were going to be like, she just telepathically sent it to them.
I don't think that's what we get in the movie, but I think it might have been their submission that's to Hans crazy. Zimmer to like check out.
To Hans Zimmer? I'm learning so much on this podcast. Okay, let's rewind because I'm going to start asking, what about Adele? What about this person? Was it who sent GoldenEye? Tina Turner? Tina girl?
Rest in peace.
Aw. That was the worst fucking reaction you could give to rest in peace. Like, aw.
You sure?
You sure, man?
Yep. She just passed away not too long ago.
R.I.P.
But, Nancy, how do you like this song? I know you've heard it on the old playlist several times.
It's one of those songs where if you expect like a bum, 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 like very brassy, you're going to be disappointed, but it is a very good song.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fitting for what it is. And actually this is something I really liked about it, is that it's so like so soft, so mysterious. Ooh. It's cozy, it's comforting.
Yeah.
But it's got, I don't know music at all, but it has that thing where one note sounds, I don't know how to say it, like ominous.
Mm.
And the rest stays with the actual tune for like a second, and that gives it that edge that you need for a Bond film.
Yeah.
If anyone knows what I'm talking about and can give you give me the terminology, that'd be great. You know what I mean? Where it's not all whatever. Anyway, so it sounds ominous at times when it needs to be. But then it's comforting and cozy and like kind of sexy. You know what I mean?
Those strings coming in, when it's like,
Oh, beautiful. It trickles down to you. I love it. But then like it sets a pace for what the movie's going to be.
Yeah.
It's this movie takes its time, but then it goes pow, 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 pow for a second. And then it takes its time again. And I feel like that song really just embodies that really well. Yeah. What about you?
No, I always have enjoyed it. If I were to rank all the Bond themes, it would probably sit somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Honestly, maybe in like the lower tier. I like all the Bond theme songs though, like every single one.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a one that I don't like. Maybe one.
There is one for me as well. Should we guess what yours is?
Because
you know what mine is.
We'll save them for the particular for sure. movies.
Sounds good.
Because I know what yours is. You might not know what mine is. But yeah, this one, like if I'm going through the playlist, I'm not going to skip it, you know. But if I'm ranking as far as like enjoyment goes, it's certainly based on mood. And if I'm going in to listen to my Bond theme playlist, it's usually to like get a little excitement. Yeah, a lot of these Bond themes are kind of romantic, sure. And this one falls more in that line of the romantic theme songs. And in that regard, it's probably on the lower tier of those. But I still enjoy it quite a bit. I do love it's honestly the strings, the you know, it's not so brassy like a lot of them are.
I love that.
But that's okay.
Boom, 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 like that. Yeah. Oh, that's my favorite part. Because it tiptoes and it dances a little bit, you know, it makes you kind of want to do like a little, like just a little butt shake, just a little bit. But it's elegant. It's a really elegant song. But no, I agree. Like, obviously it's not on the top for me, but I do like it.
Yeah.
I really do. I'm trying to think. Ooh, let's talk about Spicy Spice, because we've been kind of alluding to that. They make Bond Japanese. Like, they just... What's the term for that? Because there's blackface, and then there's...
There's just doing the wrong thing,
what
apparently.
Like, I don't know what the term is for that. But, okay, I will... Here's was my experience with that. You told me that they were going to do that in this movie, and I was like, whoa. And I was like, oh, it was the 60s. So... And they build up to it. Like, they give him, like, the plastic surgery, and they even put that little strip of...
Oh, they don't give him plastic surgery.
No, I know, but
it's makeup.
I know it's makeup. I know even in the movie, they're, like, put on the makeup. But they make it seem like it's plastic surgery. He's in this, like, crazy high-tech room, which I get. You want to make it high-tech. It's Tiger Tanaka's whole get-up and everything. But... Also, they're all in, like, bikinis, which I'm like, okay, like, put a lab coat on, you know. Or, you know what? No, screw it. Have some fun with it, I guess. If you're putting makeup on someone, you want them to be sitting up so then you know how it rests on their face. So that's just my thing. But,
it falls off anyway.
I guess, but that's what I'm saying is, like, they put the strip on him and everything, and then they, like, I thought they were gonna go full on, like... I don't like it. Like, he was gonna look like he just got pied in the face, essentially.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
That's what I thought it was going, and I was like, oh god, oh god, oh god, oh god, and it built up to it, and then he like raises his head, and I'm like, oh, that's fucking Sean Connery with big bushy fucking eyebrows, like,
and a bad wig,
and like a really bad wig, like such
and
a bad.
And even, you know, they
real quick, it's a bad wig, and that man wears a toupee, and they couldn't get a good wig.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just saying, like. Like, you can get a good wig. If you can make his hair look like that, you know, his real quote-unquote hair look like that, you can get a good wig. And then they got, like, big, weird, bushy, pointy eyebrows. I'm like, that's not okay.
They go through all that trouble of putting on the, like, prosthetic eyelids. But even after, like, the final reveal, like, I honestly don't even think they're on.
No.
You know, like, it...
What if he, like, took them off right before shooting? He was just like, fuck it.
So they do this in the book, too. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the Bond novels I have read. And there is a portion, and they're totally different. Like, this movie and that book, there's, like, almost nothing that is similar at all. Because the author, Roald Dahl, who's, you know, famous for, like, Willy Wonka and the BFG, amongst other things, he didn't like that book. He was hired on to... add some imagination to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he didn't like the book, so he, like, just made his own creation.
And it set the pace for movie adaptations or book adaptations for the rest of the of history.
And
like, I just don't like it. I'm going to make it my own thing. Like, okay.
So it's interesting that they kept that part from the novel in this movie, where Bond is disguised as a Japanese fisherman. I think... And people watching this movie back in the day, there's no way they could have been like, so that's convincing. It might have still been silly, but what we got was silly. They should have just, like, he's in disguise, and it was a Japanese actor. You know what I mean?
Make it like, look at what a great job we did. You know, like, we've got the best makeup artists, you know?
Exactly. That's why they did it on the Tiger Tanaka Fortress.
Sean Connery saying, "Ohayou gozaimasu," was the funniest thing in the world. Gozaimasu.
Yeah.
Hi, Zymus. Like, he sounded American. I was like, come on.
Hey, he took a second at Cambridge.
It's so funny. It's so good.
So, yeah, that is never settled well. That's something I can't defend, certainly.
No.
Even from a nostalgic perspective.
You wouldn't even want to. That's the thing. You see it and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's not fucking good. Like, that's not good at all.
It doesn't last very long either. Mm-hmm. So it was like, kind of, what was the point? Because even when he is disguised as a Japanese man, he's still getting attacked.
Yeah.
You know, people in the ninja base are attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
He almost gets poisoned in the night, like... Sorry, we know you're there, and it's obvious which one of you it is.
They're all lined up. They're all like 5'8", and there's just one 6'2" guy.
Maybe that's why he's hunching so much,
yeah,
as you said.
Real quick, do you mind just kind of talking about what happens in the book versus the movie?
What do you mean? About this point or the whole thing?
Just like, I mean, there is one key thing that happens in the book that most certainly does not happen in the movie. In the movie, he gets fake married, and then he does fall for quote unquote, he falls in lust with this girl. So there is some relationship that gets built. But in the book, it's completely different what ends up happening with her, right?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So in this story, in You Only Live Twice, the book, it is... the next part of what is called the Blofeld trilogy.
Okay.
There's the book Thunderball, where Blofeld is introduced. There is You Only Live Twice, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, where he is the main villain, and Bond gets married in that story, and Blofeld kills her in the finale of the story. So this one is a revenge tale. Bond is... He's down, he's drinking too much, he's depressed. So M kind of like sets him off on another mission. Like, here you go, get your mind out of things and get back on the job. And there's this evil doctor in Japan called Dr. Shatterhand, who has a garden of death full of like poisonous snakes and plants, and people are going there to kill themselves in very horrible ways and it's seen as like a respectable thing, like go there and kill yourself kind of deal. So Bond is sent there to basically stop these suicides. Well, it turns out Dr. Shatterhand is actually Blofeld in disguise. So now it really enforces the revenge story. And Kissy Suzuki is much more prominent in the book. She just certainly has a lot more to do, because Kissy in this film just shows up kind of near the end, gets fake married to Bond for like disguise purposes. And then she spends the rest of the movie just kind of running around, swimming, and being in a bikini and trying not to trip over her Sperry's.
Yeah.
I mean, the poor girl, I find this to be spicy. Her name's not even mentioned. She's the only Bond girl whose name's like not mentioned. I say main Bond girl because, you know, she's the one in the boat at the end with Sean Connery kind of thing.
The like wrap-up Bond girl. I guess. You know.
Wait, it's
like,
strange.
It's crazy. The only reason I knew her name is because you were like... It's because you told me. Because you were like, comma, you told me.
The only reason people knew what her name was in this film is because it says it in the credits.
That's crazy.
That's it. And I believe there's another Bond girl in this film. Her name's Aki.
Mm-hmm. I really like her.
And she's set up to be the main Bond girl. She does die halfway through the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like, maybe it's pointed out another time, but I don't think they ever mention her name other than when she's like giving Bond a fake massage and he turns around, he's like, Aki. Like, yeah. I don't think anyone ever told him that's her name.
I think there might have been a quick introduction, but I never pay attention to quick.
Maybe Tiger said it at one point.
Yeah,
I could be wrong.
I don't know if other people do this, but like if someone's like, this is insert character name here, like if it's like, this is the introduction to this character, the first time you say their name, it doesn't register with me. It doesn't. And I used to try to really focus. I'm like, oh, look, there's a new guy, are they gonna say his name? But now I'm like, they'll say it again, like, or I'll figure it out eventually.
I'll next time I fall asleep to this movie, I'll catch it.
Wake me up and be like, they said it, they said it.
So yeah, I find that to be spicy, that they especially with this one main Bond girl, they didn't use her at all. No. Where in the novel, she's very significant to the point where at the end, it's kind of shocking because, yeah, Bond stops the villain, kills Blofeld to fatality.
Was this die, Blofeld, die?
Yeah. He strangles him to death.
Yeah, he says, die, Blofeld, die. That's cool.
And it worked.
It worked.
He listened. And then, you know, the whole castle blows up and the Garden of Death explodes and Bond gets ejected into the... Oh, no, I can't remember if he's on a parachute or whatever. He gets flung into the ocean and he has amnesia. And Kissy finds him and rescues him and decides, like, I'm going to keep him and convince him that he's my husband and we live a wonderful life together and you're not a spy and you're a fisherman. And they live a long time like that together.
Like a fish flies out of the water, he catches it with his bare hands, and she just goes, you're not a spy. And he's like, oh, okay.
That's Jason Bourne.
So
what's crazy about it, too, it is revealed, he finds a newspaper that says Russia, and he's like, something is calling me to leave, and I need to go investigate what this means and get my memory back. And she... you know, allows him, says goodbye, but she doesn't reveal that she's actually pregnant with his child. And we never get to revisit that because Ian Fleming was writing his next novel, The Man with the Golden Gun, but he passed away before he could finish it. But yeah, it's just, even in later books, it never gets touched on. So I find that to be so interesting that Kissy is very significant in the lore of James Bond, but in this film... where she's probably most well known, you know, by the public anyway, nothing to do.
Yeah.
I find that to be spicy.
It's weird. I mean, because, I mean, again, the time period and just what they were kind of expecting in terms of that. Like, they didn't, I'm sure the people who were watching these movies didn't want Bond to A, have a kid, but also, and we'll get to that concept another time, they probably didn't want him to have a kid, but also they probably didn't want him to have a kid with an Asian woman. Like, that would have probably shocked audiences. Like, they are wrong, but, like, you know, that's sure, they were probably that taking time. That into consideration. Roald Dahl, I mean, I'm probably assuming was like, no, and then he just was like, cut, scratch that.
Yeah, and you know what? You're right. I don't think that was even discussed at this point in time. I mean, before they even made this movie, they were contemplating doing Honor Majesty's Secret Service, you know, as they should have, because they flipped it, and it, you know, doesn't work as far as comparing it to Fleming. But, well, even the movie's kind of strange, because it also features Blofeld, and Blofeld and Bond see each other and interact with each other, but they, like, don't know who each other is. But in the last film, you were trying to kill each other. It's, like, a little confusing in that regard, but that's if you're looking at these movies, like, chronologically. It could be seen as a reboot, because it is a different Bond. It is George Lazenby in that one.
Yeah.
But anyway, they were contemplating doing Honor Majesty's Secret Service first, but the reason they didn't is... due to weather. When they were planning on filming, the weather in Switzerland was going to be such a severe winter that they're like, that sounds cold. Let's go to Japan.
You know what? That's commitment to the actual craft. They were like, we have to shoot on location, because they could have just gone somewhere else. But I appreciate that dedication. They were
turns out it was probably it was a better choice, because other films shot in Switzerland at that time, and they had to, like, cancel/postpone shooting because the weather was indeed so bad.
That's crazy.
So they were on a tight schedule, and they just, you know, changed plans.
That's crazy.
And yeah, they certainly rewrote the story of You Only Live Twice. Plots, as I mentioned, are completely different.
The ending?
Ending's completely different. That's fine.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we're talking action earlier, and I alluded to a particular action scene that Margot revealed to me she didn't really care for.
Okay, so... Little fun bit about me. I'm not into the bang bang pew pew movies. Okay, well, let me rephrase that. I used to really avoid those movies. I didn't like them. I didn't like big explosions and big action scenes and stuff. That just wasn't up my alley. I met August. He introduced me to a lot of wonderful action movies, and I've changed my tune since. But I'm still very picky about that stuff. And there's something about, like, pre-80s, pre-90s, I would say pre-late 80s Bond films that some of these action, like, I don't even want to call them, what do you call them, pyrotechnics?
Sure.
Like, well, big explosions, okay. and it's always at the end of the, or most of the time it's at the end of the movie. There's, like, 6 minutes straight of, like, the same explosion soundtrack on a loop, and a bunch of different explosions, which I would appreciate if they were, like, done sparingly and, like, almost, like, more intentionally as, like, look at how impressive this one explosion is. And, like, you know, if you do it too many times, it loses its appeal. Because there comes a point where, like, look, the lab is exploding and getting destroyed, and I don't need 6 minutes of that. Yes, I do need the action scenes with Bond confronting the bad guys, killing the henchmen, you need that. But when it's like just straight explosion, 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 and the same, it turns into white noise and it makes me sleepy and I'm about to nod off. There's a shot that plays twice. It's the whole lair exploding and the floor is like shaking, mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. quaking, but it's little like toys, it's not real people. It's not like a big shot of it. It's little tiny people going boink, boink, boink. Like, you know, or like little tiny toys, like getting like shaken up on like a mat. It looked like I dropped like a bunch of Playmobil figures. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's what it looked like.
Yeah. And it made me chuckle too.
Yeah. I'm like, don't insult my intelligence. You know, I mean, you can, but like just be subtle about it. You know, don't make me realize that I'm dumb. And yeah, it just for me doesn't do it. It's too repetitive. It's too long. And it's too overstimulating. There's way too much going on. Mm-hmm. It's not curated enough to be, I don't know, there's just no flow to it. It's just like, release the hounds, and it's just a bunch of explosions. And you're like, can we just like dial it down for a second? I did not like that. I hope I said this in an eloquent enough way. I just don't really, yeah, he just rolled his eyes. Long story short is, it's too much for too long of a period of time with the same explosion sound over and over and over again. And it's just to show off, hey, look, we can do it. So we are going to do it. It's like when a kid is like, hey, watch me do this flip. And then just kind of does a quick rotation, like a vertical rotation. And then you're like, ah, cool. And then they're like, wait, let me show you again. And you're like, nah, I got it the first time. It's cool. But then they waste your time with more of that. So you know what I mean?
And I can see your perspective on that, because there is a lot of like ninjas fighting henchmen and just shooting each other. Like, yeah, it was kind of cool, that one part where the ninja, you know, has the katana and he's killing some of the bad guys. Mm-hmm. But then there's a lot of repetitive shots of just guys shooting guys and cutting back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's a 15-minute or so climactic action scene.
Mm-hmm.
And you had asked me, like, how much longer is left? I'm like, about 15 minutes or so.
Felt like an hour.
And yeah, we lost you. She wasn't lying when she said it gets you sleepy.
I wasn't fully asleep.
Yeah, you're dozing.
Like, I would nod off and I'd close my eyes for like a second and I was like, oh crap, we're still watching. And I'd open my eyes and again, there was poof, poof, like I hadn't missed anything.
No.
Like maybe a fight. But I got the gist of the movie, you mm-hmm. know? It's not like all of a sudden he's like, he pulls his mask off and he's actually Octopussy, you know, or some shit like that. And you're like, whoa, what? Like, it's still Sean Connery. Sorry, James Bond. And, yeah, you know.
Sean Connery is James Bond. That was on the poster of this movie.
He'll be back or whatever.
Yeah, he will return.
He will return.
So, here's like, I guess, the difference maybe between how you took this scene between how I took this scene. I love this final action scene. Mm-hmm. I said, I understand your perspective, how it is a lot of just like back and forth, back and forth. I've always enjoyed the spectacle of this final fight. I love seeing like the ropes drop down from the volcano base hatch and like all the ninjas, you know, cascading down and shooting and all the explosions going off. I always found it to be fun. And honestly, this time what bothered me the most is like Blofeld, his like plan is being foiled again. by Bond. Like, you've hired or ordered so many other people to kill Bond. And I understand this version of Blofeld is more like the intelligent enemy, not the physical enemy of Bond. But he's not very intelligent either, because he just won't kill the guy. Like, there's a point. How many times could he have just shot him or ordered someone to shoot him right then and there? It's like, I order you to take Bond somewhere else and kill him.
Take him to a secondary location.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
There's
the
even...
cat has a bigger reaction during the entire time that all that's happening. Like, his whole lair is fucking blown to smithereens. And he's like, banger.
Yeah. He, like, there's a part near the end where he's like, this is the price of failure, Mr. Bond. And he's pointing the gun at Bond, but then turns and shoots his partner, Asada.
Right, yeah.
And then he goes in the other room and he sits on the monorail. He's like, goodbye, Mr. Bond. And Tiger throws the throwing star and stops Blofeld. That's like, man, like, that's what bothered me the most with this viewing. I'm like, you're supposed to be the intelligent, like, foil to Bond, but, like, the evil mastermind, but you weren't smart enough just to kill the guy.
I think this is just something that's, like, lost in earlier movies where there's this, the development of suspense, I guess, or, like, you know, the buildup. You know, nowadays, you know that when someone's, like, taking their time to kill you, you know, as one does, you know, when you're just out and about and someone's trying to kill you, when in movies someone takes their time to kill somebody else, it implies and shows that they are really into it and they're taking their time because they want to savor it. And it makes them look sadistic and twisted, and it's a really effective tool to further develop that kind of character. I feel like they were trying to do that and make it seem like, you know, like oh, he really just wants to take his time with him, but he's not really doing anything. You know, he's not shooting him in the leg. He's not, like, you know, I'm not going to get into it because if, like, I start listing too much stuff, I'm going to look like the freaking sadist. But it's something that I think they were trying to do, and it just wasn't effective.
Yeah. And, like, maybe he was trying to, like, feed him to his piranhas. They just needed to get to his apartment first.
His what?
His piranhas.
He needed to get to his apartment first?
Yeah, that was his apartment is what he called it. He's like,
oh,
I'll be in my apartment. And he had, like, a desk and a couch there with a fireplace, but he had a river of piranhas.
His little night bonnet, and then he went to bed.
And one for me and Mr. Bigglesworth.
And then a bunch for the little piranhas.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bunch of the little nightcaps.
Little nightcaps, yeah.
As you can see, my piranhas are quite sleepy.
He kisses each of them. I don't know why.
But yeah, and, you know, there's the other... henchwoman Helga Brandt in this one, the redhead.
Oh yes,
who's that whole thing, like,
so stupid.
I can't defend that one. Like, she's hired to kill Bond. She's like, I'm gonna have sex with him first, then go up in an airplane and then jump out of it and hope the plane crashes with him in it. Like, you had him at knife point.
I want to tell you a story real quick. So this is kind of what that whole plan reminded me of. So back when I was a preschool teacher, there's this kid who brought a toy, or he was playing with a bunch of shells in the sandbox. One of the shells that he really liked, he buried it and then he couldn't find it again, as one does. And you know, when you're in preschool, you're trying to, like, walk kids through the problem-solving process where, you know, I was holding a sieve, you know, just playing with it, and he was like, I can't find it. And, you know, I'm not giving him the sieve and being like, hey, do it. I was like, so how do you think you could look for the shell without having to dig all around and stuff? What do you think you could do? And I'm implying, hey, you can use the sieve. But what he says is, I guess we're going to have to take all of the sand out, and then we're going to have to fill the sandbox with water, and then we're going to have to get a bird who likes to eat shells, and then the bird will find the shell for me. And I was like, okay. I mean, we'll call that plan B, but you could also use the sieve. Like, she's trying to kill this guy. She's like, first, step one, we empty the sandbox. Step two, we fill it with water. Step three, we dangle James Bond over it. Step four, we train a bunch of birds. Like, you know, you're like, just shoot him. Like, just shoot him. The only guy who was so close to killing him was the guy who was crawling through the roof and, like, got a piece of, again, thread? Like, what are we? I'm just saying, it's always so elaborate. And it's so funny. It's fun. You know what? It's really fun.
And, you know, yeah. And I understand, like, we're trying to like find ways to stop this movie early, you know, like kill Bond. Like, that's not the whole point. it's going this adventure. And I do feel this movie certainly does take you on this, this grand, sightseeing adventure. You got, kind of a wild plot, you know, a villain trying to create World War III. And there's all these classic tropes that are involved throughout, classic villains, classic gadgets, things like that. So you do get a nice James Bond romp. But there is some silly stuff, recognizably so. And maybe at this point in time in 1967, it was time to reboot the franchise, although they kind of stay status quo. They just change the actor up. But the next film does add some freshness, but there's a lot I feel to be liked about You Only Live Twice. But what's your verdict?
So wait, what was your verdict?
I didn't really say mine.
Oh,
fully.
Okay. I thought you did already. Not fully. Oh, I guess I didn't understand. My verdict, honestly, nostalgic. As a novice, there's just too many things that stand out. And it's a good movie. It is a good movie. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that the nostalgic viewer is most certainly going to enjoy this movie way more than the novice. Mm-hmm. The novice, there's too many holes. The blatant racist freaking, like blatantly, not even like, ooh, subtly, maybe that's a little spicy. Like, no, just outwardly racist things that happened. Obviously, it was the 60s. It was a different time, but it didn't stand the test of time. And the dubbing and the silly things that happened here and there, the Blofeld not being super convincing in how he wanted to kill Bond, and like there's just too many things, that ending, the big explosions, that as the novice, and obviously I'm not speaking for every novice here, I also want to mention that, but I really do think it is a nostalgic film over everything, and so I'm gonna say nostalgic.
I understand that. Not that I'm disagreeing with your verdict. I would just throw out that I do feel like this movie can be for newcomers. I wouldn't say start with this one, but I would say it could be for newcomers for a historical aspect of it. Yes, the sightseeing of Japan is cool, but as I mentioned at the beginning, honestly, like the Austin Powers comparisons, like the parody of Bond, this movie might be amongst the most parodied of Bond. Like this is the one that people parody. The evil hollowed out volcano lair, you know, the evil villain trope of the volcano lair. That's from this movie. The evil villain with the scar on the eye that's bald, you know, that's from this movie.
Yeah.
Dr. Evil himself, you know, some of the little innuendo jokes are from this. For like a historical aspect, like appreciating this film, it might be kind of cool for a novice to come in and be like, oh, that's where this is from.
Mm-hmm. I see what you mean, yeah.
But
just as a movie in itself, you know, go on.
Even like Ken Adams sets, I think, are, and I'm not saying that that's a game changer for like, is this for the nostalgic, the novice, or both? But I think it is as far as like historically viewing films, like seeing his sets in this movie are pretty damn cool. So, but yeah, this is a very highly nostalgic film for me. I have a lot of like personal things with it. I mentioned it's like very comforting to me. And through that, it is in my like top 10 favorite Bond movies.
Okay.
It's one of my most rewatched. I do watch this one multiple times a year.
So what's the verdict?
I'm saying both.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly for the historical aspect. But if you're saying just as a film itself, I would probably say nostalgic.
Okay. Final verdict, though, because you gave two verdicts. Final verdict, taking everything into consideration.
Nostalgic.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
We agree. Spooky. I think we've agreed on all of them so far, all two of them.
You know, I as soon as I said it, I started sweating. That tells me. I think it's both.
It's not because it's 98 degrees in the attic right now.
No. It's definitely, I can't go back on what I was saying. Like, it's historically, I think, a good visit.
Okay.
And whether you like it or not is a different story. But I think it should be seen for both newcomers and nostalgic viewers.
Okay, I'm going to stick with nostalgic. Just not saying avoid it. I'm just saying, like, save it for way, 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 way later. Build up to the nostalgia.
Just imagine if we didn't set the mood with the ramen and the sushi.
Oh, my God. I'd be laughing my ass off the whole time. I mean, every 10 minutes I had a comment. I was like, what, are you goddamn kidding me that they're doing this? Again, like the movie, but, you know, it's a little silly. It's not, that was the most condescending way. Like, this is someone's, like, livelihood. There's someone out there whose entire room is themed to You Only Live Twice. And I'm like, it's silly. Like, that's, I didn't mean that. Okay, well, there you have it, folks.
I just said it was in my top 10. I'm like,
poo-poo. It's dumb. It's for losers. No, it's not. It is a good movie. All right, well, that settles it.
Yes, indeed.
And on that note, I'm Margo, the novice.
I'm August, the nostalgic expert. Nostalgic expert. Yeah.
Nailed it.
And this has been a good squeeze. You can find us out there on the internet, Spotify, Amazon, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts.
And also give us a follow on Instagram at A Good Squeeze Pod. We post regular updates, and as the platform or our platform takes off, you'll be seeing a few, special posts here and there. Essentially, curated graphic representations of graphic designed representations of what we're trying to put out here. Anyways, on that note, I'm Margo.
And you know who I am.
That's August. This has been A Good Squeeze.
Hope you enjoyed. Toodaloo.
Bye.